Hi all, welcome and thanks for having me. You're probably all busy thinking about ebooks and what's going on, and so my job is to try and bring this to some conclusion. I hope I don't repeat everything that you've already heard. So I want to talk about new librarianship in the age of ebooks. And new librarianship is a term that we're using that really looks at how do you focus librarianship around the idea of conversations and knowledge, not things in books. And I've already seen the tweet stream going like crazy, and I'm sure some of these comments have come up before, but let's get into them. And I want to start with a mental experiment, a thought experiment for you. And that's the idea that, let's say that we take our ebooks, and whether you're an iPad fan, or you're a Kindle fan, or you're an odd hardware fan, or you just love reading through web pages online, whatever it is, let's take a look at and say to ourselves, what would happen if when you bought your next device, whatever it is, that $10 was added to the cost of the device, and that $10 went into sort of a universal author's fund. And with that $10, you had a ubiquitous network connection. You could download any book anytime. Right? And then what would happen is at the end there would be some grand reckoning scene, and the money would go off, and like most of it would go to Daniel Steele, and then a few dollars would come to some of the other authors. But the idea being, you know, what happens if it literally was any book, anytime? All right? So my question is, would this be a good thing or a bad thing for libraries? And before you think this is just a totally crazy experiment, this is not radically different than how things like advertising for the radio works and playing music and stuff. So would it be a good thing or a bad thing for libraries? Would it be a good thing or a bad thing for librarians? And I think those are two different questions, but we'll get into a moment. So if you look at it and you say, you know, this would be a really bad thing for libraries, right? Libraries' values, it's collections, it's buildings, and suddenly if people don't need the stuff from us, if they don't need to come in and borrow or get things from us, and realizing that on that Twitter stream there's been a discussion about a digital disconnect, but stick with me for a minute, that we don't need libraries. You know, we can just say, forget it. We now have solved this problem without having to storehouse them. On the other hand, if you look at it and you say, you know, this would be really great for libraries, that the value of libraries and librarians is in the knowledge, that you don't need the stuff, you need actually librarians more. That imagine if someone came to the reference desk or someone came into your school library or someone came wherever it is up to you as an embedded librarian and said, you know, I'm really struggling with this problem. How do I handle this? What do I do? And the answer is, well, could I see your device for a moment? And you pull the device, and you just do a couple clicks. And it's like, well, I just put three books on here that are exactly what you need. Go read them, and thou shalt be informed. Right? This is a very interesting idea. And what I want to take a moment to think about is, you can't really end up halfway on this conversation. You know, if this is the scenario, you either look at libraries and librarians' work as collection management, collection maintenance, aggregation, or you look at the work of libraries and librarians as connection management, the idea of connecting people together, connecting them to ideas, and around learning and education. And before you say, well, Dave, this is really an absurd question, these types of things would never happen, the truth is, if you look at a lot of how our library budget models work now, they do, in fact, look a lot like this question. We've seen this massive shift from ownership to rental. And this isn't about ebooks. We go back to the point when we were leasing CD-ROMs and making it come into the classroom and bringing them into our libraries and such. Right? Through databases, we have digital rights management, digital content. We're connecting people to all this stuff that we don't own. And you look on top of that problem, we see an explosion in artifact production, which is even if we had healthy collection budgets, we couldn't buy it all because, darn it, publishers just keep putting out more and more and more and more and more titles. It's like paper is somehow getting cheaper and let's just keep generating more of it. We also see this disaggregation of content. In academic circles, the notion of the journal is becoming practically quaint. The idea that when someone comes in and looks for something, they're not looking for a journal, they're looking for an article. And it almost doesn't matter what journal it came out of. And so we're seeing this idea that content is being ripped into different places. An explosion of data in that increasingly what's driving everything from scientific inquiries in universities to scientific inquiries in a K-12 setting is being driven by data and massive data sets. The fact that you know, my fifth grader can get online, go to NASA, and download telemetry data about a satellite around the sun is a bizarre concept. And it's really different learning experience than it was when he went and read about the sun. But I would argue that there's still very much a role for a school library in that. In fact, that's even more of a role for a school library in that. Can you trust the data? Where did it come from? What are you going to do with it? How do you analyze that information? And finally, we're seeing a complete disintegration of the traditional publishing model. I mean, we're going to get into this later about what's an e-book anyway. But the idea here that we're seeing, you know, things that don't look document-like. You know, what do we do with Facebook? You know, what's a MARC record look like for Google? My favorite is gigapixel images that you can, you know, we're getting to the point with technology that you can stand on one end of giant stadium in the middle of a game and take a massive 10 gigapixel image. And with that one image, you could zoom in and see everyone's face that was at the game that day. You know, what does that look like? How do we store that? What do we record it as? Do we put everyone's name on it? Oh, let's tag it, right? We're seeing the idea of where music comes from and the idea that, you know, you don't make money on the albums anymore. You make them on the concerts and the T-shirts and all these kinds of things. That we're blowing apart the idea that there are these nice little channels that gave us nice little documents that we could put in nice little shelves. Gone. I mean, one could argue whether we ever had it, but certainly gone. So what I just want to dismiss before we go any farther with this is that the idea that because books are changing or e-books are growing, that is somehow a threat to librarianship is absurd. The real threat is the perception on the part of librarians and members that libraries are about owned artifacts. Right? And I use the term members. Just want to give out, you know, Joan Fry Williams, and I've seen her name come up, and she's brilliant, and I want to give her due credit for this, which was, you know, as a library was working on a strategic plan, and they were saying, well, do we call them users? Do we call them customers? Do we call them, what do we call them? And she said, I have a radical idea. And she went out, and she asked them, and they said, you're members. We have a card. You know, we pay taxes, or we pay tuition, or we pay whatever. We have ownership in here. We're members. And I love that terminology. I love that phrase because it talks about co-ownership with communities. It talks about the fact that what we're doing for ourselves, that we're of the people here. So now that we've established that, you know, the fact that Kindle is selling more than hardcover books is not the end-all and death of libraries. Quite the opposite. Let me turn my attention to e-books and why I ended up here. And I will warn you, as I've warned a few people coming into this, that e-books make me cranky. E-books make me cranky, and it's not because, one, I don't like e-books. I love e-books. It's not because I don't use e-books. I only read fiction on e-books, and I desperately want to get everything I ever wrote into an e-book format. What makes me cranky about e-books is the fact that the current implementation of hardware and software is so boring. That we look at these e-books and we look at these devices, and in fact, Kathy can attest to this, part of the reason I ended up here is because when Apple announced the iPad and they showed iBooks as the software on it, and I saw the wood bookshelf, I nearly shot myself. It was amazingly arcane. It reminded me, whenever I see a digital version of a wood bookshelf, it reminds me of when I went to Radio Shack in the 80s to buy any electronics, and they all had wood veneer because it, like, classed them up. I just look at this and I say, how many thousands of years have we been working on written language and we can't get past wooden bookshelves? This is crazy to me. Now, so what makes me cranky about e-books is that I see such great potential and opportunity in e-books, and I just see very few people doing it. It seems like we're so busy chasing one model of what a book is, that we're ignoring the possibilities. The other thing that frustrates me about e-books is that they're not really helping to solve the real problem. So what do I mean? Well, what I mean is when I look at the advertising, when I talk with some of the people developing e-books, when I look at how it's being positioned, this image, you know, the quaint, waspish 30-something on the beach reading a book, or cuddled up on the couch, or the soft, dulcet tones of, you know, Celtic music playing in the background as you're reading your latest novel is like the use case scenario that when I see the hardware, this is what we're going after. right? And I don't want to be a little Freudian here, but I really think that at some point the people developing ebooks were the kind that were cuddled under the sheets with the flashlight late at night, and their parents kept telling them that they couldn't read because now they seemed obsessed with reading at night. Is it too bright? Is it too dark? Is it too heavy? Can I put it on the side? Whatever. What is the real problem if it's not how do we read on the beach? Well, for me, the real problem, and Ray Kurzweil did a great job, I will not repeat this because you may notice I have no pyramids behind me. There are no nuclear explosions going on, and I'm not creating DNA. I asked why I didn't get the video, and they said that I had to wait till Ray died. So, you know, if that happens, I'm going to be all with the cool background. But anyway, so I'm not going to go through too much of this, but, you know, this is the exponential explosion of storage. You know, back when we were working on stone tablets, we could get a character per inch. Now we talk about trillions of characters per inch on magnetic media. When we look at the rate of production, it used to be how fast could we chip away it, and then how fast could we write on papyrus and wait for the ink to dry, and now, of course, we can just turn our computers to randomly generate letters and just send them out at extreme proportions. We're also seeing the idea that the transmission's gone crazy. How long does it take to get data a mile? Right? Well, when you were on a horse, it took so long. When you were walking, it took so long. And now, of course, we talk about how many terabytes we can move instantaneously. But in all of this, of course, the real leveler of the equation is the ability for us to comprehend that data has not changed one lick ever. That we are reading and comprehending as fast as we were when we were wearing togas and hanging around in Greece going, hey, Socrates, is that hemlock? Anyway, so what we really need to be thinking about with reading, and I want to be really careful here, but we want to be talking about learning. And the reason I want to be careful is I don't want this to be what we have academic texts and we have fiction texts and we have things that we read for pleasure and things that we learn from all reading. We learn very much about ourselves. When we read Catcher in the Rye and we figure out, well, was Calden just lazy or was he a rebel? This teaches us about how life works, right? So the idea here is that, you know, we need to look at how we can comprehend, learn, and make sense. So that's the real problem we're trying to solve. The other thing we need to realize is that we are really looking at a massive change when you move to a digital format. Something radically different happens. I was just giving a talk talking about reference and talking about the maps. When you looked at maps, maps used to be pictures of places. Now, whether they were satellite pictures or hand-drawn pictures or beautiful things I love to put in frames, they were pictures of places. Now, maps have become a facilitating infrastructure. Right? When you look at drive somewhere and your GPS is telling you where to go, when you go online to find out how close the hotel is to the place you want to look at, when you go online and, you know, I love Facebook privacy, when you go online and check yourself in and then check three of your friends in because they actually weren't there, but who knows, you know, this idea of maps as pictures of places has really transformed itself into maps as a facilitating infrastructure for conversations, discussions, and social worlds. So, the idea here is when you move to a digital world, the whole notion of what is a book, a journal, or whatever, traditional terminology becomes metaphoric. They become metaphors, documents and collections. We then append prefixes, e-journal, e-book. But they're not. They're not e-books that are just electronic. And, you know, you can do this in the conspiracy theory notion of if they were books that were just electronic, then Amazon couldn't walk in and take away Animal Farm from us if they didn't feel like us having them, right? But on the same, you know, we put this in a positive way. If I'm flying at 30,000 feet with a Wi-Fi connection and I run out of books, I can't just pop back to get another one, but an e-book can magically show up. I can send out something that when I realize that I've written something very stupid, I can go ahead and change it and just forward that out to everyone. I never have to finish a document. They're metaphors, right? The idea of what we can do with them are metaphors. And when you introduce any new innovation, the first thing we do is we seek to automate and replicate. But I want to look at ebooks and think, how can we go further than this? What more can we as librarians, we as people interested in learning, what can we do with this world? So what I'm going to do is I want to walk you through looking and thinking about ebooks in three different ways. Now, I haven't made this glossy and cool and, you know, scrolly or whatever. It's sort of cartoonish, but it's cartoonish for a reason, which is that I don't want you to get hung up with the interface. I don't want you to get up and say, well, I wouldn't put that button there. My God, did you feel great? Really? I would much rather you develop the interface. I want to just talk about ideas, and these ideas aren't the only and the best. These are ideas that really are just something to get us thinking and thinking beyond the idea of how can we turn paper to pixels. And so I'm going to talk about some general concepts. Then I want to talk about the idea of what we can do within objects, meaning what we can do within the book, as it were. And then between objects, how can we handle this? So let's run right into the concept. And if we look at reading, the first thing that we have to realize, so I wrote something for School Library Journal, and it said something like, it should be a social experience, it should be a conversational experience. And the number one response I got back was, reading is quiet and contemplative. That I can't read in a crowd, that I need to take time, that I don't want lots of shouting voices. And what I want you to think about is that reading is really a larger process than just the idea of what we pull off the page. So I want to take a moment to expand the idea of what is reading. I promise it will be quick and not terribly ivory-towered. Reading has a physical decoding process, right? Physical decoding is the idea of words on the page, that what we're trying to do is understand that is an A, that is a B. Together they make this word. Together this word makes a larger sense. There is also very much the idea of a cognitive decoding goes on, right? So that words are really talking about the meaning of words, that they make sense. I believe Liz Liddy, my dean, is currently listening to this, so a quick shout-out and absolute attempt to brown nose here. But her work in natural language processing is amazing because she said, look, it's not just about the letters and their combinations. It also has to deal with these whole orders of language, that if you say the dog chased the cat and the cat chased the dog, they mean radically different things with the same words, but order matters. And the fact that you need to know what a dog is, and the fact that you have to understand that the dogs and cats have very different understandings. If you say the cat chased the dog, it's funny. You say the dog chased the cat, it's annoying. So we have to understand that we need to go beyond the idea of how do we physically decode things off the screen. If we only worried about the how we physically read, then yes, we worry about quiet environments. We worry about e-ink and resolution and the ergonomics and how heavy it is and does it weigh on us. But if we look at reading in its cognitive sense, I'm not saying that's unimportant. I just want to put in a larger context that when I say reading, I don't just mean I'm looking at letters on a page and how comfortable that is. And I'm not just talking about PDF formats. I'm talking about the idea of how do we make sense of this? Because ultimately, how we handle that curve isn't how fast we put words into our eyeballs. It's how fast those words connect to other ideas in our head and how we comprehend this. And if you don't think that reading is a social activity, then I ask you for a moment to think about your reaction to this book. Because when you look at this book, either this is a great book, or this is a horrendous book, or this is a book I would read, or a book I wouldn't read, or it's part of a larger movement, and Tea Party, and the idea of people turning elsewhere, and, you know, all this other stuff. So while reading is a very isolating in the sense that it's how we decode it, the larger concept of reading is extraordinarily social. That how we understand what book we're going to read, where's the next book, what am I going to think of this book? Did Oprah like it? Does that help me or hurt me? All these kind of stuff. That's the part I think that we have a real opportunity to jump past all of this idea. That if we get past the idea that this is e-ink at whatever resolution, and we begin to think about how we make sense, we can do some really cool stuff. So what do I mean? Well, let's start with the idea that we have the book. Now, this book may be related to other books. This is not a hard concept for us. We spend a lot of time worrying about how these things are related. And it may be related to multiple books, and they may be related to each other, all by the same author, all on the same topic, all from the same publisher. But what I also want to bring in, that the relations between these materials, these books, may be very unique and very idiosyncratic. The example I always give is that if you were to take Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone and say, I want more like this, the holy grail of catalog systems, more like this. I would say the more like this for Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone is the complete Lego encyclopedia and the dictionary of every Star Wars vehicle ever produced with schematics, Why? Because those were the books that I read to my, at the time, 6-year-old son when he was really getting into reading and really getting interested, and I read those books over and over and over and over again. Now, I don't think I can go into a catalog and say, hey, can you send me, I want more like this, and have it come, you want more like Dave? And the answer may be yes. And it used to be that we had to put books and physical artifacts on the shelf that we had to pick one way. This is fiction, this is cookery, this is whatever. Now, with computer systems to sort through and find them, we can organize them all different ways. And why stop at books? Right? This idea that books are somehow documents and bound in a separate world, it's not true. When we move to the e-world, they're connected to any other sets of ones and zeros streaming digitally. So these books may take you to web pages. This is a blog talking about this topic, and that takes you to a whole different community. Here's a group of people, whether it's a reading club, whether it's, you know, Tea Party folks or anti-Tea Party folks or people who like coffee or I don't know, but it may take me to whole different communities. These books may be turned into a movie, and the movie can take you to the soundtrack. And if it's a book that teaches you how to do things, it may take you to an application, whether that's a physical buzzsaw or whether that's an app you load on your phone. The point is that we can connect all of this different media together because we no longer have to worry about the physical stuff goes there, these things go there. And these connections can be unique to us. And so what we can create are these new ways of connecting them together. And then if we aggregate them, well, if this is more like this for Dave, and this is more like this for Sally, and this is more like this for Jim, is there a commonality? Well, it turns out that people read this book, most of them like these types of connections, as seen there by the red lines. And that kind of data can lead to recommender systems. Recommender systems that don't just work off of the Dewey class or the LC class, but they work off of the community. It turns out that the majority of people in our community, our school, our university, our physical location, our law firm, our whatever, these are how they combine these things. These are the ways they find them ordered. When you look at something like economic development, part of your community may look at economic development and see it very tied to education. Others may see it very tied to youth violence. Other people may see it in terms of taxes, and other people may see it in terms of recreational opportunities and culture. The idea is that your community can now organize how I find that next book and that next material, not just the text within it. And we can take these kinds of organizations and we can blow off the bookshelf view and keep that there. It's always cute to have it. But the truth is what we really need is we need this more dynamic way of doing it. You know, when I grab a book and I pull it over to the left on my screen, it drags three of its friends with it because it thinks that's what I need based on the other books I've seen, based on my friends, based on all this information. That when I click this movie and I say, well, gee, what more do you have for me? It says, well, here's a book and here's an article and here's a community talking about it. And it's suggesting this not based on some wholly single view of the world. It's based on the value add of librarians working with their community, working with their individuals to create these connections. And so this could turn into, you know, the web page, right? So it doesn't have to be quite so fancy. It can just be a set of here's some materials and recommender systems and all that. So the way to think about e-books is not in terms of they're physical books that have to go someplace, or we need to create a physical equivalent of them. You need to think of them as a social activity, and they're artifacts that support an ongoing conversation. That conversation may be, well, who am I? That conversation may be in the community, who are we? That conversation may be, I need to do this. But we can track that conversation and organize around the conversation how people are learning. Not by, well, it looks like a book. It must be a book. Quick, put an LC class on it. Right? Now, the one thing to think about is this is very different than the idea of every book's an app. Right? Because if we do the every book's an app model, we're going to end up with 300,000 different interface options and new tools and things. And I think that's just going to be screwy in of itself. I have an iPad. I like my iPad. It's delightful. However, I have so many apps that it takes me a half an hour to just keep swiping back and forth to find how I can get to Angry Birds. This is not an effective user interface because it just assumes that all of these things, oh, yeah, they're apps. You'll figure, we'll give you folders. That's not what we need. We need these are things that help me do something, and they're orchestrated around what I need to do. Organize them that way. But let's also talk about within the material, within the book. Because one of the things that I really want us to get out of the idea of is that books come from authors go to publishers, publishers print them, we buy them, we lend them. we need to get so far away from that, I can't tell you. We need to get back to the idea that books and materials and written text and information is documentation and artifacts that come out of an ongoing conversation. They come out of people creating knowledge. And if you're reading a book, it's part of your knowledge creation process. If you're writing a book, it's part of your knowledge creation process. And so the idea of authoring and reading is merging. I don't think it ever was that radically different to begin with, but now we have tools that can make it that obvious. So here I am reading a book about, you know, here's this book on university knowledge and all this, et cetera, and I say, well, gee, when did this book happen? You know, when was the author writing about this? And so why not pull up a timeline? This is a Google timeline. Let's mash it up, right? And the idea is that now I can get context while I'm reading it. I can look into this and begin to understand it. One of the things that drives me nuts is the idea is I'm writing a book on how to get your next mortgage. And I get to the point of calculating a mortgage payment. And in the book, I'm going to embed a URL so you can go out and find a mortgage calculator. Why? Why not just put it right here? In fact, one of the things, my son is busy reading Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief. And so here he is getting a mini lesson, and some would say an odd lesson, in Greek mythology. And so as he's reading this, he's going, what does Poseidon look like? And what does this happen? And how do we look at this stuff? And the idea is that why not give him the tools to actually put that together? Why not embed, authoring and creation tools right in here? So as you're reading through here, this idea that somehow we've rediscovered the highlighter and that this is the main killer app on ebooks has to go away. The idea that we annotate text with text, that we underline and highlight, those are great, but why stop there? Why don't we annotate with voice and video? And let's go even crazier. Why don't we annotate with applications? So in this case, someone's reading this book and they're saying, well, gee, I can create this image of, you know, the author, and I can create multiple ones. And just, you may not be old enough to remember HyperCard, but we need HyperCard for ebooks. We need something that very simple folks can quickly put together, a stack of images, and they can go in and say, I'm going to build a simple function. I'm going to build a simple application. So as my son's reading Percy Jackson, he builds a mythology browser, right? Just a simple point and click and loads it in. And so now he goes and says, all right, I'm reading the book, and boom, there's my app. And if I click on it, up comes my app, and I can embed it in any ebook I want. So when I'm done with Percy Jackson and I go read another book about Greek mythology or another material, I can just have that app follow me. And then what we can see is, well, I can share that with my other friends who are reading Percy Jackson. The idea of reading, authoring, goes away, because what we're talking about is knowledge building. We need to get away from the idea that there's a physical act of reading. Yes, there is. But the problem we're trying to solve is, how do we learn? And that is both a absorption process and a production process. And librarians are fundamental in both sides of that. They're not just there to feed that process. Here's the materials. And then I once said, you know, sometimes librarians act like they have a shovel in one hand and a catcher's mitt in the other. So when someone's ready to write that article, they just shovel more and more and more references to them, and then they wait for them to publish it and get printed, and then they sit there with the catcher's mitt to get the article at the end. The truth is that librarians are vital to every point in that process, from discovery, exploration, synthesis, understanding, sense-making, production, distribution. For example, everyone here at some point has thought about what the ebook program looked like. And you probably thought about, how do I acquire them, how do I give them out, how do I move the physical media. How many of you have set up the ebook publishing so that when an author, whether it's a faculty member, a teacher, a student, a community member, walks in and says, I want to make an ebook, you say, here's the process we have to produce and distribute your ebook. I mean, talk about in the days of, you know, Blockbuster going broke, and in the days of, let's just call them, big retail stores of books closing down and creating them, we have a very active front-end market. And that market, not only for people to find materials and distribute materials, but produce materials. Our communities are building knowledge. And are we there capturing and helping to disseminate it? Do people come to the library to see what every other place is like, or do they come to the library to understand what this place is like? Anyway, I digress. Because once we've created this app, well, then we can put it in a place to share it, right? So we can look at the App Store. Now, think about the App Store for a moment. You go, oh, trendy. There's a Mac fanboy. They're Android app stores. That's not the point of an App Store. The point of an App Store is, this allows you to customize the environment around you. When you look at your phone and you can tell it, I want Angry Birds, I want this game, I want something that I can read with, I want all these other things. You're not a user of that phone. You're not some passive consumer where someone else is dictating what your telecommunications experience looks like. You're an orchestrator of it. You're an author of your mobile environment. You need to be an author of your ebook environment as well, because now you can come in and find that app. And so someone says, well, here's a good chat app. And now I can chat with my friends if I so choose while I'm reading this. I can't tell you the number of times I or my wife have been reading, turn to each other and goes, oh, I really wish Cindy could read this. Well, she's online. Let's go. Or, better yet, you know, as a publisher, I'm going to put this app in, and you're reading it at 5 o'clock on Friday, and you've allowed me to let you know. Turns out, our author conversation's about to start 30 minutes. Would you like to join? And we can actively build this back and forth, right? And so we can add new functionality. Now, we can go even further than this, which is why I stopped, which is once we have this magical connection by people reading and authoring and annotating and creating new content, creating new data, what they're doing is they're creating extraordinarily rich pathways to the web. They're creating new pathways that others can follow. They're creating new ideas of knowledge and relations, and so the information geek in me gets really interested, and we can have interesting taxonomies, and we have matrix views, and we can use this to do RDF, and suddenly many initials follow afterwards. But just take it for a minute that what you have in front of you is this spider web of knowledge where you have not only the items that you use to consume, but the items that you produce and the items you use to decipher and understand. And they're all connected, and you understand those connections. Once you have that, what do you do with it? Well, imagine next time someone's walking through your library, they bring up their ebook app, whether it's a reader or what have you, and they look at your books, and they bring up their phone, and they say, well, what's here? And it says, well, here's a book here. And by the way, there's another book, but it's on loan. Would you like to request to get it back? And by the way, your friend Fred said three aisles over is a better book. You should go look at that. Because this kind of data through something like an augmented reality interface where we can browse the shelves. I mean, it's like GPS for the library, which is not a radically new idea. But think of it now where the routes come not from you putting in a call number, but the routes come coming in by telling them your problem. So when you're up on the fifth floor and you're looking at a book and you say, oh, that's an interesting book. You mean more like that. Once again, my definition of more like that. It says, okay, turn left, go downstairs, go across the way, pull up the shelf, and on the third shelf you'll find, boom. And having that app walk you through and move it through. Now, the idea is that's not paper-like, and that's not an e-ink discussion. The point of this is it's about knowledge. And this notion that we keep worrying about what's an e-book and what's that, we need to give it up. We need to go to what the problem is that we're trying to solve. Now, I'm going to get cranky again, and I apologize. I think my 511, my introductory library science students are listening to this across the street, and they're all knows what are coming next, which is Dave's about to lose his temper, but I apologize for that. We must, as a library community, as librarians, stop waiting for them to figure this out. We need to stop saying, oh, well, once the war between Amazon and Sony and Apple settles itself out and we have a predominant winning platform, we'll get it. We need to stop figuring out that this is just another acquisition question. We need to stop thinking of this as just another, we're waiting for other people to decide how this works, and once the publishing and business model works in, we'll do our best to struggle against it, right? This is our problem. This is our opportunity. I know this is going to come across a little bit as biting the hand that feeds you, but waiting for publishers to figure out the ebook model of the future is like waiting for heroin addicts to develop methadone. We need to think of it ourselves. If this is vital and important to us, this is something we can do. We need to stop buying a Kindle, a Nook, and an e-reader and being disappointed. If I see another post that comes around going, we got a Kindle. It turns out you have to give it a credit card. We don't know how to give it a credit card. We would like to preload books. We can't preload books. I'm going to go nuts. These weren't designed for that system. And I don't, this is not saying that Kindle is evil or bad or Nook or it's us versus the publisher. It's just they were trying to solve a problem. How do I take the physical books that I'm comfortable with and turn it into a device that I'm more comfortable or as comfortable with? That's not the problem that we're trying to solve. The problem that we're trying to solve is how can we help our communities get better and learn more? And that may require a radically different view of this. So stop doing it. Stop whining about publishers and, well, the publishers haven't figured this out and there are too many standards and what we need to do is we need to fix this problem. We must build it. Now, this may sound absurd, but why isn't the library community building an ebook platform? Think about this for a minute. If I had said this in 1982, you would have looked at me and said you're insane. But think about it today. First of all, we have a network infrastructure. It's there. Between the 3G cellular network and Wi-Fi in every coffee spot and in every library, we have a really amazing network infrastructure. We have a platform. I don't care if you're an Android fan or you're an iOS fan with an Apple systems. You can go down and you can buy a $100 tablet. You can buy a $500 tablet. You can buy hardware to do this on. Right? And not only are these platforms that are physically what we may need or may not need, but they're all open platforms in the sense that we can create our own apps. Now, before you get to me, you say, but Dave, Apple may not approve it. And I say, you know what? We have this thing called the Library of Congress that just said if they don't, we can jailbreak it. Right? That's the power of the library community that I think we all too often ignore because we pretend that we just consume stuff. We need to create it. We need to produce this material. We have standards, EPUB, XML, RDF. We have the standards to do this. We have already relations to authors and publishers. Tell me if we got every acquisitions department in this country, in schools, academics, public specials, any library you've mentioned, and we said, all right, every time you talk to a publisher, you tell them that we are going to build in a 14-day loan period for any e-books that we buy. And they may not like it, but when they go next door, they're going to hear the same thing again. Right? We need to do this for the people that we have a connection to. And by the way, we also need to work with our community so that we become publishers. That's why I say we need to learn from them as well. We have the fundamental data to do this already. We have a lot of this connective tissue to WorldCat materials. So let me just give you a few parting thoughts here for a moment. Right? Conclusion. Focus on conversations and learning, not on reading. Reading as a physical decoding act is an important act and should not be dismissed, but it's one that we understand well. And the problem that we're trying to solve is not how to read, it is how to solve problems. That this is our opportunity and issues. That libraries are not threatened by e-books. We should be thrilled with e-books. We should be in active partnership, active collaborations, and we should get well into this game and help shape this game. That the future is bright for libraries and librarians, and e-books and whatever, but only if we make it so. If we as librarians view the fact that if we get this $10 fee on top of every Kindle or iPad and whatever, that we're out of business, then go out of business. But if we say, no, libraries and librarians are about adding value, doing something new, knowledge, building with that community, this is something amazing that we can do. But we must make that difference. And frankly, we have to make sure that we are not failing. This is my son, by the way. He does a much better what he calls stink eye than I can. But the idea here is that every time we dream big and we stop and say, oh, well, let me find citations for that. We need a committee around it. We better come up with policies quick. Do we have a licensing agreement that we can use that's 30 years old? We need to stop doing that. We need to start weaving tales and telling stories and getting our communities excited about e-books, sure. But about libraries and knowledge and new ways that we can tie this together. We need to show our passion for this area and our passion for knowledge and not just materials and books. But I'm going to end my remarks not with ebooks. You've heard about ebooks all day. I'm going to end my remarks with the most innovative thing to ever come out of libraries. That would be librarians. I think all too often we forget that there is a fundamental difference between an innovator and an early adopter. Buying something new does not make you innovative, even if you're the first one in line to do it. Even coming up with just a new idea doesn't make you an innovator. What makes you an innovator is solving a real problem in a better way. E-books, paper books, scrolls, stone tablets before them were not in and of themselves innovative. They simply were. No, the innovation around these different formats and tools and technologies lie in the person who solved a problem. Whether that problem was recording information, facilitating business, preserving culture. These are the problems that call out and still call out for innovation. Our missions as librarians is not to help our customers shop. We are not super consumers. We are in the mission of improving our communities through knowledge. If ebooks can be a tool in that process, then we need to innovate in that world. If it is about embedding ourselves in the context, then we should leave our buildings behind. Our communities are hurting. Our students are struggling to meet basic standards. Our leaders are struggling with the obligations of governance. Our business are struggling in an economic malaise. Our mothers and fathers are struggling to raise good kids. Our college students are struggling with heavy weight of debt. This is our mission. These are our problems. This is our opportunity to innovate. You are not a customer. You are not a consumer. You are not a user. You are a participant in control of your world and able to shape your own learning and environment. And so are those that we seek to serve. Lead. Thank you very much.